Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the state of Georgia. The phone number, if you want to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I want to put this in perspective of what we're dealing with right now, just so you have a sense of how things are shaping up. We've got a situation with a virus where, for example, yesterday I had to drive around Macon, dropping off some cloth masks my wife has made to various nurses and doctors who are friends of ours. She made a stack of about 100 of them because they're running out of their disposable masks. And they a call went out to a number of organizations and people who can sew to make cloth masks that can be worn over the disposable mask, so you can replace the cloth mask throughout the day. You can wash them, and you can preserve the disposable masks that are running in short supply right now. And I tell you all of this, one, my wife is awesome, but two, more importantly, we continue to see fairly well that the there's this sentiment among people out there right now that there's something wrong with the storyline, that the storyline is ultimately about the media and the media is overplaying this and it's not really true. It's not as bad as people say. And you know, frankly, when you look at the numbers, it's not nearly as bad as what a lot of people have said. But I want to give you some relevant context for that, because I think a lot of the relevant context is missing, and we need to put this into better proper context because of what's going on right now. By and large, what is happening is you have members of the media who are using this as a way to undermine the president. And we should just acknowledge that, that there are people within the media right now who are using the spread of this virus as a bludgeon against the president. Campaign season's over. Joe Biden is ambling, rambling on the teleprompter. And so the media's got to give him some cover. And so, of course, they're using this. In fact, Axios this morning, which is the online – it's an online news portal in Washington, D.C. Axios has had to stop – a story and delete a tweet that essentially said someone took an algicide chloroquine medicine because the president said so and they died and it's all the president's fault. And actually what it was is there's a chlorine pill that kills algae in fish tanks. And some idiot took it thinking it was the anti-malarial medicine. And the media decided to blame the president. So it's true that the media is using this to try to blame the president. But that doesn't mean there's also not a bad virus running about that we need to try to stop. Two things can be true at once. That's one of the things that we tend to miss in American society these days, is that two things actually can be true at one time. We miss this. And we can't nuance it. We can't say both. It's got to be either or. And so we're missing the facts of this virus. So I want to spend a little time on that this morning. And I want to take your phone calls as well. I'm always happy to hear from you, including those of you who disagree with me. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Do I need to check the radar this morning? It looks gross at my house here in Macon. I was tired of the rain. And then I just, oh, great, googly moogly. I do need to, that's a technical term, by the way. I need to look at the radar real quick. If you are north of Rome, you got some really nasty stuff. If you're up in Clarksville, you've got bad stuff as well. Dalton, you're about to get really slammed by very, very heavy rain. Same in the Jasper area. It's coming to you here very soon. All of North Georgia got some serious storms. South Georgia, you're okay. Carroll County is getting some rain here in a little bit. And drizzle and sprinkles in Middle Georgia. South of Warner Robins, you're really okay for now, but more stuff will be coming in. Yep, it's a messy day out there in Georgia. Now, let me give you the audit trail before I go any further with this. And again, the phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you want to see where I get this data, I get this data from the Georgia Department of Public Health, and I want to let you be able to see it as well. If you text the word data to 33777, text the word data to 33777, I will send you back a link. I will text it back to you quickly. I got an automated system going where When you text the word data to 33777, you get back three links. One is to my daily newsletter I'm writing to keep everybody up to date with the state of play on this. Two is this link to the Georgia Department of Public Health. And three is the dashboard to the Johns Hopkins University Medical Center, where they are documenting the global spread of this. And you can zoom in to nation by nation and state by state, frankly, and see it. Now, here's the breakdown in Georgia right now. This was updated at 7 p.m. last night. 800 cases and 26 deaths. And here's the county by county breakdown now through the spread. 152 in Fulton, 79 in Cobb, 74 in DeKalb, 69 in Daugherty, 61 in Bartow, 35 in Gwinnett, 24 Cherokee, 21 Carroll, 19 Clayton, 19 Lee, 14 Clark, 11 Fayette, 11 Richmond, 10 Floyd, 10 Hall, 9 Coweta, 9 Henry, 8 Lowndes, 7 Douglas, 7 Forsyth, 6 in Gordon, 5 in Paulding, 5 in Rockdale, 4 in these, Chatham, Glenn, Newton, Polk, Spalding, and Troop, 3 in each of these, Columbia, Lamar, Oconee, Peach, Pickens, Worth, 2 in each of these, Baldwin, Bibb, Butts, Early, Effingham, Lawrence, Lumpkin, Muskogee, Sumter, Terrell, Tift, and Whitfield, and 1 in each of these, Barrow, Burke, Catoosa, Charlton, Chattooga, Clinch, Coffee, Dawson, Harris, Hurd, Houston, Liberty, Lincoln, Madison, Miller, Monroe, Morgan, Pierce, Randolph, Tattnall, Turner, Twiggs, and Washington. There are 46 unknown. That's the spread. It continues to grow every day. 50% of the patients are female, 48% are male. We don't know about the other 2%. I suspect they're either male or female, and the other 57 genders are not included. 59% of the cases are between the ages of 18 and 59. 36% of the cases are 60 and up. Only 1% of cases are newborn to age 17. 4% are unknown. The bulk of the spread is in Metro Atlanta. Brian Kemp has ordered now shelter in place for vulnerable populations. The city of Atlanta has gone into lockdown. Rome, where did I see this earlier? Was it WRGA's website? Rome is considering locking itself down or has decided to. And the city council, the city council in Rome has approved an emergency declaration. And they want people to shelter in place. Residents of Rome can leave their homes to get food, medicine, and other essentials. That's it. Otherwise, everything is going to be shut down there. Now, the Floyd County Commission is looking as well to do the same thing as it spreads up there. Now, again, this is all repetition for people. And I apologize for needing to do the repetition for everyone. And we're starting to see the argument. We're 7 days into this. We're starting, it was 7 days in, and we're starting to see people say, we gotta give the economy a pulse. We gotta get people back to work. The problem is this, the numbers that I'm giving you make it look like this virus really isn't significant. In fact, let me do the entire United States, because in the grand scheme of things, it actually isn't. There are only 46,481 cases in the United States. 52% of those are in New York City, which is in serious crisis right now. Its hospitals are so overwhelmed with the virus that they're having to convert the Javits Center, which is a giant convention center, into a temporary hospital, an overflow hospital. They are essentially taking all of the patients who don't have the virus and putting them in a convention center, and all the patients who do have the virus can get the medical care in the primary care facilities. They are sending the USS Mercy to New York to be an overflow hospital ship for patients in critical care but don't have the virus. They're sending a hospital ship to Los Angeles as well. And there are a lot of people who say, really, this is all blown out of proportion. And you're starting to see people say, let's just let everybody go back to work. Let's just deal with this. We can deal with this. I want to put a couple of things in perspective for you to give you some proper context on your thinking. The countries of the Netherlands and the United Kingdom decided to do what many of you right now are advocating. That is, let everybody go to work, keep the people who have the virus at home away from everyone, and make all the old people stay inside. they decided to do that, and what they saw was a massive spike in hospitalizations to the point that the hospitals in Great Britain and the Netherlands are so overwhelmed. People who have critical care needs who don't have the virus are being left to die because there's no space. Very much you're seeing what's happening in Italy happening in Great Britain and the Netherlands because they decided to take the approach a lot of people are advocating, that of let's just let everybody go to work. If you get infected, everybody take your temperature. If you get infected, stay home. Otherwise, go to work, keep the economy going. And the panic began to set in and the hospitals began to fill up. And it was finally explained to the prime ministers of Great Britain and the Netherlands that if you do this, a whole lot of people are going to die needlessly. And not just the people with the virus, but the people who need access to hospitals and can't get it because the hospitals are so overwhelmed with the virus. So they have changed course to the point that Boris Johnson, the prime minister, went from everybody go to work and keep things rolling to...
The coronavirus is the biggest threat this country has faced for decades. And this country is not alone. All over the world, we're seeing the devastating impact of this invisible killer. To put it simply, if too many people become seriously unwell at one time, the NHS will be unable to handle it, meaning more people are likely to die, not just from coronavirus, but from other illnesses as well. So it's vital to slow the spread of the disease, because that is the way we reduce the number of people needing hospital treatment at any one time, so we can protect the NHS's ability to cope and save more lives. And that's why we've been asking people to stay at home during this pandemic. And though huge numbers are complying, and I thank you all, the time has now come for us all to do more. From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home. If you don't follow the rules, the police will have the powers to enforce them, including through fines and dispersing gatherings.
That's the British Prime Minister. The police are going to start rounding people up who leave their homes in Great Britain. Now, listen, I know some people out there are never going to be persuaded until they themselves get this illness that it's a big deal. And fortunately, many of the cases turn out to be minor. But I'm actually really aggravated with the people who consider themselves pro-life who are taking the position that our 401ks are more important than our families. And I see people out there taking that position. I see people out there taking the position that the economy is more important than lives. Now, listen, I get it. I get it. The cure should not be worse than the disease. It shouldn't. And an economic depression is arguably worse than the disease. The suicide rate and other things that will eventually come from this will be worse than the disease. But right now, the cure is for you to sit your butt on the couch. So shut the hell up. That's the cure for the disease right now, is just stay home for a week or two. If we all stayed home for a week or two, that would be 2 weeks. Yes, the economy would tank for those weeks, and then it would come back. If we could let Congress do what the Republicans want to do, which is the Republicans want to pay people to stay home. They want to give your business money and then have your business send you that money as your paycheck and tell you don't actually come to work. That's the Republican solution. Do you know what the Democrat plan is right now, why the Democrats are holding this up? The Democrats actually believe that you should do that, stay home and get money, but also that we should throw in things about jetliner engine efficiency, that we should try to take care of global warming while we're taking care of the virus. I got a problem with that. That's not part of the crisis right now. And yet that's why the Democrats are holding this up. Nancy Pelosi wants money for a performing arts center. Nancy Pelosi wants money to do engine efficiency per jet, not global energy efficiency in jetliners, but actually she wants a tracking system for the energy efficiency of each engine on each plane flying in the United States. And that's why she's put the kibosh on the current plan. And the Democrats are backing her up on this, and the media is backing her up on this. On Sunday, Chuck Schumer was bragging about the bipartisan cooperation in the Senate on this legislation, and now suddenly he's blasting the Republicans. And the media is giving them a pass. So I understand why people are cynical, and I understand why people are frustrated, and I understand people don't want to be in their homes for 2 weeks, and I understand people have jobs, and Congress is trying to come up with a reasonable solution to keep people home and keep their income going. hopefully they can come up with something. But it really is remarkable that the solution to this, the actual radical solution, is just for us not to associate with each other in person for a week or two. And we can't bring ourselves to not do that, which is to some degree good. We're communal people. We like community, but also bad that we're more interested in the economic effects right now than what it's going to do to the population. And we know if we treat this like the seasonal flu, we're talking a million people dead. And you can say that's hypothetical and that's nonsense, but we know right now from every European country and the United States that the mortality rate of this is about 1% and the flu is about a tenth of a percent. So it's very easy to extrapolate what would happen if this spread like the seasonal flu. And by the way, it's more contagious than the seasonal flu. And all you got to do is sit on your couch. If you don't have to believe me, though. You don't have to believe me. You don't have to believe me at all. You don't have to believe the experts. You don't have to believe Dr. Fauci. You don't have to believe the president. You don't have to believe the vice president. You don't have to believe the governor. All you need to do is go down to your local hospital and talk to the doctors. Because right now the doctors are going to tell you at the local hospitals that they're being overwhelmed with people with flu-like symptoms and they're short of supplies. It's happening here in Macon where I am. It's happening down in Houston County, south of me. It's happening in Fulton County. And right now in Georgia, it's actually fantastic because our governor is working diligently to make sure every hospital has the resources they need and we've got enough supplies to help. But then you've got people in New York and Los Angeles, and we're having to send naval hospital ships to help with the overflow crowds of people getting the virus. Clearly, something is going on different from other virus pandemics we've seen in the past. All you got to do is open your eyes to see.
Want to be on the show? Call Eric now at 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425.
It is Eric Erickson. Welcome back. The phone number here, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I want to go to Ella J, to my buddy Joe. How are you, Joe?
Eric, you're a great American. I happen to be down in Sea Island, but I wanted to tell you I've got some pretty interesting breaking news. Steve Moore is a very good friend of mine. He's on Fox Business News just about every day. He called me last night and said, Joe, after this crisis is over, and he thought it would, you know, that they'd call, Trump would call for people to go back to work in about 3 weeks. Anyway, he said we're going to have the greatest stock market economic boom in history. And Eric, I agree with that. I've been in the stock market 57 years. I watched Chevron's president on Fox Business News in an interview. And Chevron stock, which is a super oil company, mm-hmm. is paying a 9% dividend.
Right.
I mean, I've never seen such buys. I've been a stock market guy 57 years, Eric, and I have never seen anything like the buys. So I've been buying blue chip dividend stocks ever since this decline. And, of course, I think everybody ought to, before they buy anything, they ought to get them a trusted stock market advisor. But I tell you what, I have never seen, Eric, in my life, I'm 80 years old, and the buys that are present in the market today. And when this terrible virus is over, I agree with Steve Moore, whose business partner is Larry right. Kudlow. I think we're going to have the biggest stock market boom
in history. I'm glad you say that,
history.
Joe, because I'm buying myself. I mean, every time I see the market go down, I just buy. Thank you for that. I agree that once we all get back to work, we're going to get the economy booming again. The question is, when do we get back to work? And the president, of course, is concerned about the economy as much as anything. And he's right to be concerned about the economy and the people out of work. We got to figure out something that's going to happen. But there's also some real candor from the president here. Let me play this for you. This is the president last night at the White House.
This morning, your Surgeon General on the Today Show said he wanted Americans to understand that this is going to get really bad. Do you share that prognosis?
Of course I do. It's going to be bad. And we have a lot of people dying from the flu, as you know. We have a very bad flu season on top of everything else. It's very bad. It looks like it could be over 50,000. And certainly this is going to be bad. And we're trying to make it so that it's much, much less bad. And that's what we're doing. I think we're doing a very good job of it. If you look at other countries, what they've been through, and you look at the kind of numbers and compare them to ours, which is a much larger country than most, the numbers are pretty amazing. And it started with the fact that we stopped people from coming in from a highly affected area and infected area. And that was a good thing to do. So, yeah, it's bad, and it's going to, obviously, the numbers are going to increase with time, and then they're going to start to decrease.
Yep. In fact, it looks like Italy, having gone on a nationwide plateau, is starting to see its numbers fall. There's some concern out of Singapore and Hong Kong that the virus is rearing its head there again. We'll get into that. But there's also a campaign going on. People are running for president. Whatever happened to that? I'll tell you about it when we come back. Poor old Joe Biden. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show. The phone number, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you want to be a part of the program, Bob and Marietta, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to get your opinion on this. Back in 2002, I remember something similar after 9/11. When they were trying to have the Homeland Security Department, and Senator Max Cleland at the time was holding up the bill because mm-hmm. he wanted TSA agents to be able to join unions. And I remember that cost him his Senate seat in 2002. Do you see possibly any similarities that the Republicans can use even to save vulnerable seats that the Democrats are trying to put unions and their own special interests like wind farms and things like that into this particular bill? And are you aware that in this bill there's a provision from Pelosi of ballot harvesting, kind of like what they did in California?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you called, Bob, because I wanted to get into all this. And you're right. This is very much, I think, like the Max Cleland situation where, to this day, the media peddles this mythology that Saxby Chambliss called him a supporter of Al-Qaeda or a supporter of terrorism or some such, which was not it at all. Saxby Chambliss legitimately ran an ad against Max Cleland in 2002, pointing out that he was holding up legislation designed to establish the Department of Homeland Security because he wanted to put unionization privileges in it, which is why the Democrats, interestingly enough, are holding up the present legislation. The Democrats are holding it up because they want advanced unionization legislation and labor union guarantees put in the legislation. And the media is going through the same playbook. If you go back to 2002, I was a lawyer at the time in Macon, and I remember the conversations, and they were almost all about how the Republicans were the bad guys and Max Cleland was the hero, worker rights for federal employees, which is very much the way the media is talking about this right now, is that it's somehow – it's workers' rights, and – not really. It's a union grab in addition to trying to federalize elections, which under the Constitution, elections are the purview of the states. And Nancy Pelosi wants to do a power grab there. By the way, one member of Congress, I forget exactly who it was. Hang on a second. I can tell you, I think it was a senior Democrat in the House. It explained what they were doing as they can use this to better realign national policy in their direction. This is in Yahoo News. Here's the headline. A Democratic representative told colleagues the coronavirus bill is, quote, a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. A tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. And they're using the media to help them on this. By the way, the Republicans in Congress are livid on this. And I'm just not sure that they can stem the tide on this. Here are a couple of pieces of audio from the floor debates. This is Senator Ted Cruz.
It was one party, the Democratic Party, saying to this chamber and the American people, hell no. We won't even take this up and discuss it. At a time of crisis, at a time when people are dying, that's wrong. That's shameful. When we awaken this morning, following the Democrats' obstruction, worldwide, there were 372,563 reported cases of the coronavirus. In the hours since then, just today, there have been an additional 23,352 cases reported today. While the Democrats are blocking the bill, 23,000 new cases today. In the United States, When we started this morning, there were 35,224 cases this morning. Right now, as of the latest numbers, there are 41,708 cases in the United States today. That means we've had an additional 6,484 cases today while the Democrats are blockading. And by the way, where are the Democrats? C-SPAN doesn't show this whole chamber often, but it'd be nice if they did, because that entire side of the chamber is empty. They're not showing up for work. They're not doing their job.
That was Cruz. Here's Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, John Kennedy from Louisiana.
The majority has 5 minutes. The senator from Louisiana.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know what the American people are thinking right now? They're thinking that the brain is an amazing organ. It starts working in a mother's womb, and it doesn't stop working until you get elected to Congress. You know what the American people are thinking right now, Mr. President? They're thinking that this country was founded by geniuses, but it's being run by a bunch of idiots. You know what the American people are thinking right now, Mr. President? They're thinking, why do the members of the United States Senate continue to double down on stupid? Now, this is not a Republican bill, Mr. Chairman. This is a bipartisan bill. We have spent hours and hours and hours negotiating these provisions with our Democratic friends. This is not a slush fund. This is a bill to help people and businesses in America.
That's Senator Kennedy of Louisiana. Well, two more bites for you to understand and put this in proper context. Here's Mitch McConnell on the floor.
So let me give the American people a taste of the outstanding issues we woke up to this morning. Here are some of the items on the Democratic wish list over which they choose to block this legislation last night. Tax credits for solar energy and wind energy. Provisions to force employers to give special new treatment to big labor. And listen to this, new emission standards for the airlines. Are you kidding me? This is the moment to debate new regulations that have nothing whatsoever to do with this crisis? That's what they're up to over there. American people need to know it. Democrats won't let us fund hospitals or save small businesses unless they get to dust off the Green New Deal. I'd like to see Senate Democrats tell New York City doctors and nurses, who are literally overrun as we speak, that they're filibustering hospital funding and more masks because they want to argue with the airlines over their carbon footprint. I'd like to see Senate Democrats tell small business employees in their states, who are literally being laid off every day, that they're filibustering relief that will keep people on the payroll because Democrat special interest friends want to squeeze employers while they're vulnerable. Squeeze these employers while they're vulnerable.
And he's telling the truth there. The Democrats are putting in aviation jet efficiency standards into a bill to help small businesses. That's they're actually doing that. I wish I was making it up. I'm not making it up. They actually are doing that. Now, Jake Tapper actually had on Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut and asked him about this, and notice the inability to give a straight answer.
Mitch McConnell says Democrats are making 11th hour demands, including a tax credit for solar panels, collective bargaining rights, and that's what's some of the sticking points. Why would Democrats be pushing a tax credit for solar panels or collective bargaining rights?
So listen, my focus is on making sure that hospitals and states have what they need, that we don't do any of these no strings attached bailouts. That's where my focus is. And if those demands are met, then I will vote to proceed on this legislation.
I want you to take a listen to what Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer told Wolf Blitzer just a few days ago, just on Saturday.
But actually, to my delight and surprise, there has been a great deal of bipartisan cooperation thus far.
A great deal of bipartisan cooperation thus far from your leader, Chuck Schumer. Now Democrats are saying the opposite, no bipartisan cooperation.
So what happened here is that Republicans wrote their own bill, then they brought Democrats into the room, and there were good faith negotiations that were occurring for about a half a day. Senator Schumer remarked on those negotiations. And then late on Saturday night, Democrats were kicked out of the room, and Republicans wrote the bill on their own. We only got a copy of it Sunday morning from lobbyists on K Street. It was shared with corporate lobbyists before it was shared with members of the Democratic caucus. And that, to us, was a sign that the priority here was in helping corporations, not helping workers and solving the virus. So there was a brief period of time where Democrats and Republicans were in the room working together. And now we are doing that again. So we are working, Republicans and Democrats, to try to bridge the differences that exist here. I think we can do that, and I think that we can probably do that by the end of the day.
Would you agree? I mean, you kind of skirted the question, but would you agree that matters like solar panel tax credits and collective bargaining rights, while I understand are important to Democrats, like, it's not worth holding up this bill?
So I don't know where those reports come from. I've told you what my priorities are. My priorities are making sure that my taxpayer dollars aren't going to pad CEO salaries and that the public health crisis is identified. Those are my priorities. I don't know about that reporting.
He doesn't know about that reporting. That's Nancy Pelosi making those demands. Is he not clued in on what the Democrats are actually demanding? Because that's part of what Nancy Pelosi's demanding. What, one more bit here. These are important for you to hear, because the Democrats are so convinced that the media has their back, and so much of the media does. I mean, for Pete's sakes, the New York Times changed a headline three times to ultimately make sure it didn't include that the Democrats are the ones backing this or blocking this. And then Mitch, they came out with an editorial blaming Mitch McConnell. So it's important to note that they're not quite even winning the media war on this. This is from MSNBC, Garrett Hack, a pretty good reporter over at MSNBC on Capitol Hill. Listen to this.
Well, this is an opportunity for Democrats to show what their priorities are in this crisis, given the absence of a compromise bill in the Senate. Pelosi said a couple days ago that the House would offer its own alternative when she wasn't satisfied with what was being discussed on the Senate side. There you saw her lay some of it out. The House is not in session right now. The House could not vote on this bill tomorrow or probably the next day or the next day, even if they wanted to. And I think what you're seeing here is Democrats believe they have leverage here. Republicans don't even have 50 votes in the Senate where they are in the majority right now because some of their members are quarantined. They are trying to find their way through a solution, and Democrats believe they have some political leverage here to control the response here in the way they would like to see it performed and to get some of their priorities across the finish line. There is a political danger of overreaching here, and I think that's what you're seeing play out on the Senate floor, where Democrats are being criticized for things like including cancellation of student debt, which you could argue is not a part of the coronavirus crisis. Things like you heard the speaker there talk about election security and vote by mail, which is a very interesting issue for all of us who've been covering the connection between the virus and electoral politics, but arguably not an urgent crisis in March. And so I think this is the line the Democrats are going to be walking here is, do they press their political advantage as they see it to get the most favorable terms possible out of a Senate bill, or do they press too far and risk being blamed by the public for slowing down a bill that is widely agreed to be urgently needed out in the rest of the country?
Out in the rest of the country. Key phrasing there. This, I mean, that's an MSNBC report. And you know that people were watching this on MSNBC, their typical viewers, wanting to eat that guy alive for daring to suggest that collective bargaining rights and student loans and election security for November are not critical in this March bill. But that's where we are with the Democrats, claiming that there's an urgent need to do something and then throwing in a bunch of unrelated things. And the Republicans are having none of it. Now, you and I both know, and there are a lot of you listening to this right now who are privately whispering to yourselves, muttering, the Republicans are going to cave. The Republicans are going to cave. They probably are going to cave. They probably are. By the way, do you know someone who's not out there looking leaderly in all of this? Someone who is out of the spotlight at all?
Beef up the number of responders dealing with these crush of cases. And in addition to that, we have to make sure that we are in a position that we are. Well, let me go to the second thing. I've spoken enough on that. The president must use the Defense Production Act.
This is, Joe Biden has taken to live stream Who knows how many people are watching, but is it not amazing that Joe Biden, the Democrats are not allowing Joe Biden to look leaderly and participate in negotiations of this bill, that he's completely marginalized. He's going to be their nominee now. They've circled the wagons on his behalf, and they've completely marginalized him in these conversations. Now would be the perfect time to bring Joe Biden to the table as the lead negotiator for the Democrats, but Nancy Pelosi won't do it. And what's Pelosi doing? Collective bargaining rights, student loans, election stuff, jet airliner efficiency, and bailouts for performing arts theaters. Here's the thing. Remember when everyone said it was strategic genius for Nancy Pelosi to withhold the articles of impeachment? And then she got bullied into doing it and looked weak, and then impeachment failed? Nancy Pelosi's Achilles heel is that so many members of the media love her. They're willing to make excuses for her and give her a pass in a way that does not translate to your average American. I kid you not, Kyle Cheney at Politico is pushing out a story that essentially what's happening is the Republicans are just resurfacing their anti-Nancy Pelosi playbook. That explains things right now. You got so many members of the media willing to protect Nancy Pelosi and do her bidding that they have become detached from the needs of ordinary Americans. How many of you who are sitting on the sidelines right now because your business won't let you into work or your business is out of business due to lack of business, how many of you are concerned with the engine efficiency of individual airlines in the United States right now? Ask yourself that question, because that's why you're not getting a check from the federal government, because that's what Nancy Pelosi is concerned about.
I really do like his opinion on things.
Eric Erickson, the information you need and the truth you demand.
He tells it like it is.
Live every weekday.
Remember as well, if you text the word data to 33777, I will send you back three links in one text message. The first is to the daily newsletter that I'm doing. You can subscribe to it. It'll arrive in your inbox in full form. It won't be excerpted. You can pay for a little more detailed stuff, but in general, it is the COVID-19 stuff is free of charge, delivered to your inbox every day. Most days, I shouldn't say every day, just trying to keep you up to date on what's going on. The second link is to the Georgia Department of Public Health audit of how the virus is spreading in the state of Georgia. And the third link is to the Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 dashboard that shows you globally how the virus is spreading. So text data, D-A-T-A, to the number 33777, and that will make it happen. Poor old Joe Biden. He's having a real hard time with these live streams. He's just not down with technology. He stands around and kind of mutters and grumbles at the camera. He's not sure necessarily where to look, which is kind of bizarre because there's a camera right in front of him. And then when he does look, he just kind of stares. And it's just the whole thing is weird, and they're trying to come up with something. And I do actually feel a little bad for him in this scenario, because this is uncharted territory for all of us. This is particularly uncharted territory for a 78-year-old man running for president who's used to being among the crowds and used to going out on the campaign trail, and now he can't do that. It turns the entire scenario on his head. It's not something he's used to. Let me play you one more little bit here. This is kind of funny. Again, this is Joe Biden doing his little press conference thing that he's doing from his home. And he's having a real hard time as these live streams start and get going, figuring out when he's supposed to be on. Now he wipes his nose and his face. And he stands.
Good morning.
What? So I got to describe this to you. So the you hear the guy say the mic's hot, and then he says, the guy says, you're live. And Biden says, I'm ready to go. And the guy says, you're ready to go. And there's this long pause. He looks over at the camera guy again, and then he looks at the camera and he wipes his nose and he wipes his mouth. And then he does the good morning thing. I thought we're not supposed to be touching our faces, Joe. Poor Joe. Look, I feel bad for the guy. He and the president both. They like to be on the campaign trail. They like to be engaged. They like to do all these sort of things, and they can't right now. They can't do what they want to do because they just, can't get on the campaign trail. They can't get into crowds. They can't do all of the things that they as candidates are used to doing. And I totally understand that, and I feel badly for them. But that is kind of the nature of the beast right now that they're dealing with out on the campaign trail. Now, I want to move on to other things in the next hour. By the way, spoiler alert, Governor Kemp is going to join me at 11:30 to talk about what's going on. We actually had to move some guests around. I was going to interview the CEO of VidAngel, many of you know that, at 11:30, but the governor's office called and said, hey, can he come on at 11:30? Actually, it'll be more like 11:40. He's got to get out of a meeting, and then he'll call in with the governor to talk about what he's done in the state. When we come back, I actually am interested in your calls on what you think of the governor's performance on this issue right now. 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. He's trying to do a balancing act, and the Atlanta media is beginning to savage him for not doing everything the Atlanta media wants him to do, including a lockdown of the entire state. I've talked to some people familiar with the governor's thinking on why he's not doing a lockdown of the entire state. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about that, and I'm happy to take your calls and your thoughts on that as well. 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. And then at 11:30, Governor Kemp is going to join me here on the show.